It's Power Hour LSU.
Y'all, it's baseball season. You better fire yourself up because obviously here on PHL, we love us some LSU baseball. I'm not the best LSU baseball breakdowner in the world, but anything Steven Monster Milam does, we are going to cover. So we're going to break down a few things I've learned about this year's LSU baseball team and talk about something that is pretty interesting regarding college baseball, which is the schedule. And you guys know there's nothing more I love in the world of sports than discussing schedule gymnastics, if you will, because as is the case often with the Texas Longhorns, they always dodge smoke. And we must beat out the Texas Longhorns for Easton Royal. And I'm joking, Texas fans, but it is interesting that Texas baseball for the second straight year has arguably the easiest baseball schedule. But you're here mostly to hear me break down football, and I want to talk about Easton Royal. Y'all, this is the best high school wide receiver I have seen in Louisiana for a very long time. And we're talking about a Kayshon-level talent. And I say Kayshon, he played in the Super Bowl yesterday. So look, I love me some Easton Royal. I'm not going to lie. It is rare for me to sit down and watch a highlight tape and then a few days later go back and watch that highlight tape because it really was that fun. I remember during the Lane Kiffin search, it was like one of those five-hour streams that we did. Someone brought up Easton Royal, and I was like, yeah, I've not really watched him. I pulled up his highlight tape, and I was like, what the hell am I looking at here? So you'll see coming up, as we do with Lane Kiffin every day on a live stream, we're going to go through Lane's tweets. He retweeted something about Easton Royal a little bit earlier in the day, and I'll let you know how important he is to our operation. As you can see, a near consensus five-star, the 247 service is the only one right now that doesn't have Easton Royal as a five-star, but Rivals on Three views him basically as a Cam Coleman, Jeremiah Smith level player. He's a different style of player. Those two, of course, well over 6'2". Easton Royal is 5'11". But when you do watch him, you do feel like you are watching a miniature Jamar Chase. The tape really is that good. He really does have that level of juice when it comes to yak. And if you guys want, we could break down some of the tape again, but I don't want to do that because we've done that already on here. So, you know, for me, this is the single most important flip for LSU this cycle. And it's weird because, especially now with Lane, wide receiver isn't going to be the most premium position in high school recruiting because with George McDonald and the wide receiver coaching tree, if you will, you feel really good that LSU is always going to have good wide receivers because you bring in a great group of wide receiver coaches. Sawyer Jordan, also a really good wide receiver coach. You bring those guys in and you feel so comfortable about this offense moving forward and pass catchers out there making plays for LSU. You know, I still think Easton Royal is that important. I really, really, really do. I think he is potentially a national championship level defining player. I truly, truly, truly do believe it. And the other 2027 player I want to talk about is one that was predicted to go to Texas A&M. And this is where it gets a little confusing here with Zion Forstall, because you see IMG Academy and New Orleans, Louisiana. IMG is in Florida, so why does it say New Orleans? Well, Forstall is a New Orleanian. He played his early high school career at Jesuit High School, I believe, and he was dominant. He was a five-star, and as IMG normally does, they go and recruit the best players to come to their state-of-the-art facilities in Florida. And obviously, we have a few IMG players on our team, too, from the transfer portal, and Winnie Watkins and Jordan Seaton. But the truth is, Forstall is a force to be reckoned with. Here's the problem. According to the powers that be, the Super Sharps, Steve Wilfong, who is probably the single greatest predictor of college football high school recruiting, he has Forstall going to Texas A&M at this juncture. So, yeah, that stinks. There's no other way around it. But at the same time, when you think about it from an LSU vantage point, look, we signed the best defensive line class we have arguably ever signed in this last cycle. But still, five stars from Louisiana. You want to get those guys. Even though Forstall is going into year two of his high school career away from Louisiana, you want to make sure you lock down your own backyard. Now, I do want to get into college baseball briefly here, because this gets into something that I personally like to do. And I want to give my season predictions for LSU going into next year. Now, to me, the person who covers LSU baseball better than anyone else on the planet, he will join us tomorrow night at 6:30 Central. You know him as John Eads. He'll join a few others as, I think, a 10-time guest here on PHL. We love some John Eads of WAFB. I think he's one of the best TV reporters we have ever had in the state of Louisiana. And I do think LSU is going to the World Series again this year. People that are smarter than me basically feel that same way. I will say this, and I know I say this quite a bit. There is nobody on earth that I love watching play for LSU more than Monster Milam. I'm a big dog guy. Obviously, that's his charity. I'm also short. Monster Milam is also short. I'm always going to cheer for my fellow miniature short kings out there. And he is basically the only autographed LSU baseball photo I have in my room, right? The studio. I know we replaced it with the green screen, but if I were to lower this green screen, you would see Monster Milam's autograph in this right corner thing. By the way, join our YouTube membership. We are watching an all-timer in terms of affability and just total fun. Him changing his color of his hair in the postseason is always a fun thing to look at as well. And you look at this LSU baseball team as a whole, obviously, you know, you do wonder about not having number 32 on the mound going into next year, Mr. Cade Anderson. But I don't know. You guys tell me. Maybe I'm missing something. Look, where did... Or is Cade Anderson back? Maybe I'm wrong on that. No, wait. No, he's with the Mariners. I was like, because I pulled up Cade Anderson's profile, and I looked really quickly. I was like, wait, is he back? Because it looked like his LSU profile was still active, but my heart sank. I was like, well, we're definitely winning it if Cade Anderson's back, but no, he's not. I think LSU is going to the World Series. Now, what I want to bring up before we get to all your comments and such is the SEC schedule. So everybody wants this schedule to be more balanced. And the story is Texas is playing the number 10 power-rated team, the number 11 power-rated team, the number 12 power-rated team, the number 13 power-rated team, the number 14 power-rated team, the number 15 power-rated team, and the number 16 power-rated team in the SEC going into next year. So seven different teams in the bottom tier of the SEC Texas gets on their schedule. And this is the second consecutive year that Texas that Texas obviously gets this. I do have a potential solution to this. I have two, and I want you guys to correct me on this, the baseball nerds out there. First thing, roughly every college baseball team in the SEC plays three non-conference weekend schedules. Get rid of all of them. Get rid of all of them and play three more SEC schedules. Now, that means you're replacing a series with like an Xavier with South Carolina or something like that. But that will get you to 13 SEC series compared to just 10. Now, nobody will sign up for that because that makes your schedule that much tougher. You're not going to have as many wins and losses. It does make your RPI tougher. College baseball has this weird thing about it where midweek games matter, but they really don't. You lose one of these, no one's going to freak out. You're not going to get hurt a whole hell of a lot. So it's a weird offseason or non-conference anyway. Midweek games just get cut off at some point. But I would make every SEC team play in a high-profile, like Minute Maid Park series where you start the season off against, you know, three other good P4 teams. Pretty much every SEC team already does that. But I would then say, look, these non-conference series aren't doing a whole lot for anybody. Let's just replace them and play three extra SEC series. That was my first idea. I tweeted it out, and obviously people flamed me for it. Whatever. You guys know how I feel about the regular season. More high-profile matchups, the better. I love SEC baseball when we only play SEC teams, and I love the college baseball postseason more than I love the SEC, right? I really do, because college baseball's postseason is perfect. They do not need to change any of it. But if you don't want to do that, my suggestion would be the following. If you want the schedule to feature more SEC teams playing SEC teams, have the top three regular season teams in the SEC, they get an extra home series the next year. And who they play are three other SEC teams that weren't in the top three that aren't already on your schedule. And then the fourth SEC team would be whoever wins the SEC tournament. All right, so you can do this second idea in two separate ways. You could just take the top four SEC teams, which honestly I prefer this way. The top four SEC teams that get byes in the SEC tournament, those top four teams get an extra series the next year, and the three teams that they play, it's not going to be a three-game series, but you play each team once. So you essentially have four different four-team pods, and it'll be the opening SEC series of the season. So let's just say next year, this year, the top three SEC teams is LSU, Florida, and Arkansas. Those three teams will all get home series versus three other non-SEC top three teams or top four teams. All right, so I didn't explain that well at all. Let's just do top four. I could give you another option here. So let's say it's LSU, Florida, Arkansas, and Georgia. The next year, for the opening SEC series, they will host three teams that aren't on their schedule. They'll get the extra home gate. And that way, you prioritize and give more meaning to college baseball's great regular season. And you get that extra gate the next year. Have the top four teams in the SEC do that. And if you want the SEC tournament to still mean something, You could do this like how they do it in soccer, where if you win the SEC tournament, and let's just say you're not a good team, you're Tennessee this year, and you're not good, but you find a way to win the SEC tournament, you can replace whichever fourth team that is in the SEC in the rankings, and you get that home SEC series the next year. And then you just play three other teams, and it's not three game series. You're just playing one. And that way, you add more teams to an annual SEC schedule. So instead of just playing 10 SEC teams, which every team does every year, every team now gets to play 13 SEC teams. Now, you're not playing all of them in a three-game series. And something else that it does for the team that gets the home SEC series is that it gets you prepared for hosting a super regional, right? Because you're hosting three other teams, good for your economy. Do it the opening SEC weekend. Make it a big deal. The SEC first pitch weekend. And just have around-the-clock coverage of it. Four different sites. The games count, obviously. I didn't explain that well at all. It's probably better for like a visual pre-recorded video. But I would love that. Anything for me to make the college baseball regular season better and more diverse is great. As you guys have learned, I am a regular season guy. Anything you can do to provide more value to your regular season is always great. So I'll do a pre-recorded video, and then people still get mad breaking this down. Because, like I said, you're not going to get Kyle Peterson-level coverage. I'm not going to know what a splitter is. Like, I know what it is, but I can't break down the mechanics of it. I'm not Anthony Renato, who I love dearly. He one of his first ever interviews was on my student radio show many moons ago. So Chance says, there's nothing broken with the baseball scheduling, but there is. Chance, you're one of the most loudest, vocal, and righteous critics of Texas's easy schedule last year. So this just diversifies the schedule. And something else it does is it gives the teams that have the best records during the regular season that much more importance. If I know as a coach I can get an extra home series next year, you know how much boom it has for your local economy that you are hosting, you know, basically a home, it's not a round robin, obviously, but you're getting three extra games, and you can monetize that. I think it's great. I think this idea is brilliant. I do. I thought about it all day. And I saw like the one big college baseball writer talking about the Texas Longhorns getting this easy schedule. Okay. Let's go to James. Oh, the Master Blaster's here. Pegasus thinks I'm sounding like an elitist. Let's go to James. He says, Carter, we need to play in-state HBCU or smaller schools so they can get money. Yeah, I'm with you. But it doesn't need to be a weekend series, though. Have those be midweek games. Like I'm not in favor of losing the midweekers. I'm not. But, you know, I think midweek games are important. I do. But many people don't. Many people want to get rid of them. I think it's good because it gives more people access to go to a college baseball game on the cheap. And some people don't have weekends, okay? But I cannot stress enough that I simply do not want college baseball to change their postseason. And I will say that what college baseball I think will do is realize that your postseason makes more money, so expand it. College baseball is the best postseason in sports. It's better than March Madness. I've said it. And it's definitely better than the college football playoff. Even though I care about the college football playoff more, nothing comes close to regional, super regional baseball. Nothing. It is literally the most perfect setup in the history of setups. Now, I want to get to another LSU football thing before we get to Lane Kiffin and his tweets from today. You know, I am of the belief that the LSU defense next year is going to simplify its approach. And, you know, I was watching the Seahawks game, and I went on a rant about this late last night. There is a former safety by the name of Adam Archuleta who tweeted out a few things that he saw. He does really good film study breakdowns. And so much of what your defense is now is based on your safeties, right? Because college or just NFL quarterbacks, college quarterbacks, high school quarterbacks, it's normally the first thing that they're looking at when they get to the snap. Is it two high? Is it one high? What does it look like from back to front? And, you know, it was interesting that LSU secondary was so unfreaking believably good last year. Just a great group. You know, when Deshaun Spears struggles for playing time, knowing what he did last year, knowing how PFF graded him, knowing the Florida game that he played, you know, it was remarkable what he was able to do. Now, will this defense for LSU be better than the defense LSU put up last year? The answer to that is probably yes, but it's not necessarily because the players are better or worse. The truth is, your defense oftentimes is only as good as your offense. So if Lane puts up more points, which we will, it would be very shocking if the LSU offense is not at least twice as good as it was last year. It makes what you have to do and what you need to do defensively that much easier. Something else that I feel will help LSU next year is the pass rush will be better with Prince Will coming over. And you would like to think that one of these five stars or top 100 recruits that are true freshmen coming over or coming on the campus here, one of them is going to provide immediate pass rushing pressure. The truth was, last year's LSU defensive line was not a great pass rushing unit. So Blake Baker realized that, and he decided, hey, I am going to put together a lot of exotic pressures, and it worked, right? It worked a good chunk of the time. The problem is, when the season moves along, and there's more film on you, and the quarterbacks, you know, we would go up against better ones. You run into Chambliss, you run into the Heisman runner-up, you run into Reed, who was good at times last year. They could figure this out. So, to go back to what Adam Archuleta said, it looked like Seattle did a lot of exotic things, and it was somewhat exotic that their blitzers from defensive backs were unfreaking believably good. But Seattle also got home with just four. There was also instances where they were just caving in the offensive line of the New England Patriots. I do think LSU's pass rush being better will make what LSU does defensively better. I really do believe so. And I also think, even though you do lose top end of the top end defensive back talent in Monsieur Delane, who was the best corner in the SEC by a wide margin, and A.J. Halsey, who was one of the best safeties in the SEC, I do think the unit will be better because your pass rush is going to be better. So if you get better pressure with four, you don't have to worry about blitzing a whole heck of a lot. And when you do blitz, it becomes that much more effective. So I'm really excited about that. And I do think Blake Baker is going to make things a little bit easier on the back end. Because a big problem for LSU, when you have to rely on those blitzes getting home, when you're going up against teams that are moving at a faster pace, it's harder to get aligned properly. You want to know why LSU had issues at the end of halves? It's because the teams that you're going up against are in the hurry up. They're playing faster. If they're playing faster, it's harder to blitz from so many different angles. It's hard. Let's go to Chance. 30 SEC games is already brutal. Midweek games give young players a chance to gain experience. There's LA Mom. So if Sark leaves for the NFL, is Lane leaving LSU for Texas because they have much deeper pockets? I don't think Sark's leaving for the NFL. And I don't think Lane leaves LSU for Texas. I don't think you should ever worry about that one. I don't think Texas would be the job that he would leave for. I think Lane is really locked in here at LSU. You know, the one thing I would say about Texas compared to LSU, LSU is going to let you be you more than what Texas would let you be, if that makes sense. As someone who was just in Austin. Michael wants me to change my background to Alec Box when talking baseball. I should do that. That's a great idea. All right, if I do some more baseball stuff, but I want people to come here thinking that we're the football mostly channel, because that's what we are. But we do a lot of baseball, we do a lot of women's basketball. Obviously, our women's basketball coverage is going to drastically increase. It kind of takes over this portion of the season because we are so passionate about it here on PHL, and a lot of you are passionate about it because we're obviously really good. So. Really quickly, before we get to the Lane Kiffin segment we do every live stream, this is one of the biggest women's basketball weeks in a very long time. All right, so College Game Day, Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Central. Y'all, this game is on ABC. This is going to be the biggest stage that a lot of the non-Flage non-Michaela's has played on extensively. And with game day being there, South Carolina obviously playing some of the best ball of their season. They blew the brakes off a good Tennessee team. You do get this game at home. Now, why is it big? Well, Kim hasn't beat Dawn yet. The one thing I love about this is I love the fact that these coaches don't like each other, all right? Or at least the public perception is that. And that adds so much to the sport. It really does. Now, do I think Kim and Don really hate each other? Only they can answer that. I mean, they're the two icons of the sport alongside Gino. You know, I do think LSU is in a good spot to win this one at home, to get this first win over Dawn. But all the pressure's on us, right? It just is, right? You know, South Carolina's not undefeated. You know, there's not, like, any thing that they are really playing for. If they were to lose this game, it really doesn't hurt them a whole heck of a lot. Maybe, you know, when you get into the one versus two seed stuff, but I don't think that matters as much to a coach like Don. So, yeah, I think all the pressure is on us because we've just not beat him. And, God, I want to beat him so bad. But we got plenty of time to talk about that game. And, you know, the big thing, obviously, is what's going to happen in the paint. You know, this has always been a big issue. Now, it was a tougher ask when Aliyah Boston and Cardoso was there, but it's still tough to beat South Carolina where it really matters in women's basketball, which is, you know, right under the goal. So I'm pumped. And then Skipper rightfully talks about the LSU softball team. Girls didn't lose this weekend and had 3 5-inning games. There you go. Skipper, you know how I feel about the softball team. Because I'm a Beth Arena stan. But everybody that follows softball, like every pitch like you do, Skipper and Sherry Berry, it gets strange because none of what Beth Arena does in the regular season matters. You just want to see it get done in the postseason. And I get that. I really, really, really do. Now, one more thing. I do believe, more so now than ever, this is the best time to be a sports fan. But it's also the best time to be a non-athletic person that likes sports. Like, seriously, you look at what a lot of these teams that have won titles, the main reason they've won those titles is because of truly elite coaching and general management from people that are nobodies. I'm serious. Because there is such a huge advantage in sports when you have nepotism involved. Of course, one of Seattle's coaches is the son of an NFL legend. That helped. But Mike McDonald was a Georgia GA. That's how he got his start. But so much of what you do as a program comes down to how well you are coached now. The Seahawks last night, that is one of the best coached teams I have ever seen. So now you get to LSU. This is one of the best staffs LSU has ever had. And like when you think of Lane and when you think of Charlie, you don't think of them as coaches who did have a leg up over everyone, right? Because they grew up with legendary coaches, right? Charlie's dad, the former coach of Notre Dame, and Tom Brady. And, of course, Lane's dad, who had a defense named after him, basically. You know, it's fascinating how much coaching matters. Football is so complex now that you look at a school like Indiana, they were doing some really creative things on both sides of the football that were different. They were being coached so well that teams were, and sharp people were wondering, does Indiana know the plays? God, coaching matters so much. I don't think it's ever mattered more. But honestly, this is in all sports. And when sports are around for so long, you got to have good managers. You've got to have, and I'm talking about on the field and off the field, you got to have great GMs. Great roster builders, great resource allocators. Sibley is going LSU by 3. So there you go. Now, coming up next, we'll get to the Lane Kiffin segment that you guys are always looking forward to. What did he tweet today?
Are you missing that sweet swing? If pain is holding your golf game back, you must check out the full simulator at the Lafayette location of Laborde Therapy Center. Yes, Chase and his team built this simulator to go along with a full set of programs catered to your needs. Yes, this entire team at Laborde Therapy worked hard to fix that back, your elbow, shoulders, wrists, knees, toes, it doesn't matter. At their Lafayette location, 337-981-4053. Call today. But what if you don't golf? And what if you don't live in Lafayette? No problem. They fix anything therapy related. Book today, LaborDTherapy.com, with locations in Carncrow, Youngsville, Morgan City, and Crowley. LaborDTherapy.com. LaborDTherapy.com. Let's go.
Alrighty. Always good to start off a Lane Kiffin segment with a Trojan peace sign. Leonard Williams showing some love to Ed Orgeron. Man, he's good, Leonard Williams. And Lane Kiffin showing some love to Leonard. Right there. President Wade Roos gets the retweet here from Lane Kiffin. We'd like to welcome Meg Casper Sundstrom as the new Chief Communications Officer of the LSU system. Congrats. You go, Meg. I'm also proud to announce that I have that same jacket that Wade Roos is wearing. Well, I have a knockoff version, I think, of that one. Teams with the most active players in the Super Bowl. LSU had 5. Havon Finney gets the Lane Kiffin retweet here. Look at that. Those front squats, oh boy. They are brutal. I did some dips earlier today. And this is what was the inspiration of our YouTube video today. Mr. Easton Royal getting the retweet from Lane, thanking God in advance. There you go, Easton. We keep it going. Process over outcome. That's a very Saban thing to say. You can be prepared as possible and still be surprised by challenges you never could have seen coming. You can have not one plan in place and discover that what you find out along the way exceeds your wildest expectations. There's so much gained in the process. It's on the field of life that you learn how to play the game, not by waiting on the sidelines. There you go. And obviously, we covered this one briefly yesterday. Look at how many LSU players in the Super Bowl. Absolutely ridiculous. These are just totals. Obviously, you see a lot of LSU players, but some of them weren't active. Still, a ridiculous amount. And once again, shout out to Anthony Bradford, the only LSU Tiger on the Seahawks. Who remembers Al Woods, who was with the Seahawks for a decade and a half? I wonder how many LSU players have longer tenure in the NFL than Al Woods. He's got to be up there. Got to be. Speaking of tenure, one of the craziest things I saw at LSU was randomly, I was at the LSU practice facility. I don't think it was a media session. I probably shouldn't say that. But this was many years ago. I was a student. And I go to the practice facility, and randomly working out in there was Darryl Green. All right, who remembers Darryl Green? And watching him work out in there was crazy because he was an NFL Ironman. He's one of the best corners of all time. Played 20 NFL seasons, all for one team. And he went to Texas A&I or Texas A&M Kingsville. But that was one of the greatest workouts. He was retired by then, too. Now, why was he working out at LSU? I don't know. Sibley remembers Daryl Green. Now, I mean, that dude was crazy good. Too bad Derek Stingley's better. I said it. Now, oh, Donnie Jones? Donnie Jones might be the answer. Obviously, Andrew Whitworth is probably in that mix as well. You know, I want to discuss the LSU expectations going into next year. This won't be a long live stream, by the way. We have something else coming up around 7:15. So, you know, I do want to realize that LSU is going to be discussed as the sexy team to make the college football playoff. Now, what's funny was we were a very popular college football playoff pick. A lot of the national experts, On3, JD, Tom Fornelli, there was many that believed in the LSU Tigers going into next year. But, you know, as I was watching that game yesterday, and as I was looking at this team, you realize that LSU has what it takes. I really do believe it. With Sam Leavitt and with a team that I feel is going to be so much better at just generating explosives, life is just so much easier when you hit big plays. And when you gain yards in big chunks, success rate becomes not as important. The margin of error increases. And one thing that I think with Lane is when you really break down the data with what has happened in college football, over the last 3 or so years, we've seen the amount of possessions per game go from 25-ish down to 23-ish, basically meaning you are lucky to get 12 possessions in a game. You are lucky, basically, to get 3 possessions per quarter. And you have to factor in that a lot of these possessions aren't all equal. You know, a possession when you're down by 20 is not the same as a possession when you're down by 7. A possession in the fourth quarter is not the same as a possession in the first quarter. More often than not, first quarter possessions are more valuable than fourth quarter possessions. Because in fourth quarters in college football, often those possessions are normally in games out of reach. So the reason why Lane was so important is when you break down what has really happened in college football, you do begin to realize that these games are shorter, drives are longer, and explosive plays are down. Lane goes fast. Lane is able to hit these explosives still with the variation of play action. Lots of flood concepts, creative ways to run flood. Charlie and Lane are really good at that. And basically, you're going to see a brand new and improved LSU offense. And because explosives are harder to hit, but Lane's explosive play rate has still mostly remained elite, that goes to show you that a lot of the changes that we've seen in college football has not affected him as much. So I do think paying up for Lane was important, because I want a coach that I know can still generate big plays down the field. Something else that's happened in college football, and you might not notice this, is that the games are just shorter, right? The possessions, the clock rules, all of that. So with games being shorter and possessions more at a premium, a big mistake, a fumble, a penalty, all of that matters that much more. It really does. So one thing I would drill into my team is Now more than ever, it is that much more important to be disciplined, understanding your role. If you're gaining an extra yard and someone pops a football out thanks to an amazing play, I don't care about that. But if you have a situation like we saw with Berrion Brown on the goal line versus Vanderbilt, where you know you're punching someone or you're getting in an altercation, which leads to us having to burn a timeout, it matters. It matters. And timeout usage becomes that much more important as well, because that could be the difference between you gaining an extra possession in a close game. So why has college football possessions gone down? Well, the one thing that I have brought up, and I don't have the analytical wherewithal to actually go through and crunch all of this data, but if there is an analytic super account listening to this, one undertold reason why college football games are shorter is because of completion percentage going up. We have more 60 to 65 and 70% completion percentage throwers. So because defenses have become more conservative and they have been better at defending the long play and they're a lot more complex, what happens is quarterbacks begin to take checkdowns. And when you take checkdowns and easier completions, guess what? The clock's going to continue to move. The only thing that stops the clock in college football, outside of a change in possession or a score, is an incompletion. It is the only thing. Nothing else. End of quarter, a score, or out of bounds under 2 minutes. Those are the only things that stop the clock. But an incompletion stops the clock at all times. So if completions have gone up and completion percentage has gone up and the passes are shorter, that causes the game to shorten. And it's something else from Chance. Teams do go for it now a lot more on fourth down. They do. All right, we'll take a few more here. Once again, I'm sorry we can't do a normal two-hour one today. Life happens. Don't forget John Eads joins us tomorrow night. You know, one thing I'll say about the Super Bowl, it always gets me, man. Like, I've literally got to sit and watch the whole thing. Like, I just love it. You know, a lot of people were talking bad about the commercials. And honestly, the greatest commercial I've ever seen is that guy that does the LSU breakdowns with LaboreTherapy.com. But I love the Super Bowl ads. And I teased this early in the stream yesterday, but one thing about the Super Bowl last year, it was the lowest percentage of commercials with the celebrities. So what I think a lot of executives did was they overcorrected. And they said, we need a celebrity in every single commercial. Every single one. And that's what we had. I thought the Dunkin' ad was really good. But there was a lot of good ones. I loved the ads yesterday. But, you know, for me, I don't have a big sportsbook partner. I'm open to joining one. I've not really looked, but you know, we are partnered with Fast Draft Fantasy. I love Fast Draft. It's a fun, easy way, and you get a deposit match bonus with promo code Carter. But I love fantasy. I love playing fantasy football. I love drafting. You know, one thing that's interesting about the sports betting stuff is you need to understand how much you are up against it when you're doing this stuff. And now with the Poly Markets and the Kalshis and all of that, and I like both of those platforms. Understand that there are people out there that are sharper than you. It doesn't matter how much you know about sports or pop or Grammy voting or whatever. The odds are not in your favor. Now, Poly Marketing and Kalshi are different because you're not betting against the house per se. But, you know, there's a lot of discussion right now with sports betting, with where we are in this society. And I still do get people that message me for picks because I have a YouTube following and, you know, people think of me as a sports expert, and I'm not when it comes to predicting games because football and just sports in general is very unpredictable, right? Oh, you had Dodgers winning the World Series? Congrats, you won that bet. But what if the Dodger base runner was just a little bit more down the line? He's scoring, and we're not talking about Otani. We're not talking about the Dodgers going back-to-back. We're not talking about any of that. So I want everyone to know this because sports betting is hard. There's so much that's going against you. Especially if it's sports books, you are up against it. Now, we'll say, I like the Seahawks last night. I didn't place any bets, but the Seahawks was your right side. Now, let's take a few more here. Carter, can you rank your three favorite sports to follow for me? It's CFB, NBA, and then probably soccer. Yeah, this one's pretty easy for me. CFB, number one. NFL number two, and then EPL number three. NBA is probably a close fourth. You know, I would say, women's basketball because of how much I love Kim and LSU, but, you know, it's more of a Kim and LSU thing than it is a sport. I would also say this, Pegasus, part of why I'm so mad at Matt McMahon right now is that this is a pretty magical college basketball season. If we're being honest, Saturday was one of the best college basketball regular season days ever. You had the Duke-North Carolina ending that had my Discord talking. We never talk college basketball in there. There was a ridiculous ending between Coastal Carolina and someone else. It's one of the best college basketball games I've ever watched. Then you had Tennessee-Kentucky that night was pretty freaking ridiculous. So, yeah, I mean, it's also interesting from a college basketball standpoint. There are some saying that this is the single best college basketball draft class than even last year with Cooper Flagg. But, you know, with the NBA, I can't. The NBA is just so bad right now. Like, the tanking and all of it, it's really bad. Yeah, Brian, what's the closest offense you've actually seen since the greatest show on turf? So the Rams. I think there's been a few offenses better than that one in the NFL since then. I would say the 07 Patriots had a better offense. I would. Wes Welker, Randy Moss, Tom Brady. Randy Moss and Tom Brady is just still ridiculous. You know, it's interesting. We can get into a discussion about this if you want to for my Saints folk. Did the Saints make a mistake by letting Clint Kubiak walk out the door? I don't think so. I think Kellen Moore, obviously, him just winning the Super Bowl was a better hire. But Clint Kubiak's offense with Derek Carr, through the first two games of the NFL season was the best offense in the NFL. And the Saints were really close to being 3-0. The Dallas Goedert third and a gazillion completion happened. But yeah, I just, all right, James, we'll see you, man. You know, I just think for me, if you're a Tyler Shuck believer, I don't think you get Tyler Shuck if Kellen Moore isn't here, because Moore apparently liked him. But yeah, I think those Peyton Manning Broncos offenses were better. Well, yeah, there's a lot of NFL takes that I keep in the chamber. Don't get me started on this Tony Dungy stuff, though. All right, don't get me started, dude. It is kind of crazy, though, Pegasus, that Darius Acuff might be the best player to ever wear an Arkansas Razorback uniform. He's that good. Think about it. Arkansas's won a natty. They had Nolan Richardson. And he's not potentially like a top five draft pick in this upcoming class. Like, college basketball is really good this year. Really, really, really good. And I think there is a lot of growth heading that way. All right, y'all. That'll do it for me. Big thanks to each and every one of you. We'll be back tomorrow night, 6 p.m. sharp, with the great John Eads joining us. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Tonight, we're doing leftover chicken wings. Let's go. Let's go.